Okay, so the identity is like this. I have an n-dimensional integral, again, over real variables, phi 1 to phi n. And so it's an exponential of a general positive definite quadratic form. So I get phi I, some positive definite matrix Aij, phi j, and then plus bi phi I, where bi are arbitrary real numbers. Okay. And so this, as you can easily check, is equal to 1 over the square root of the determinant of A, and then E to 1 half bi, the inverse of the matrix A, bj, okay? Okay, so what I want to do now is apply this transformation to the partition function of the Ising model, right? So my partition function of the Ising model, Z, so this is a sum over all configurations of the spins, E to 1 over 2t, right, sum over I and j, j, I, j, sigma I, sigma j, right? So let me just take a particular term in this sum. Let me take a particular configuration of the spins and just look at this exponential here, okay? So let's pick a particular configuration, and I have then this statistical weight of this configuration, sum of I and j, j, I, j, sigma I, sigma j, okay? And let me now apply this transformation to this statistical weight, but backwards, okay? So I will identify J, the matrix Jij, the matrix of the interactions between the spins, with this matrix Aij inverse, right? And sigma I and sigma j will be my Bi and Bj, okay? So if I apply this transformation, yeah, so I'm going from here to here, okay, in the opposite direction. So I'll have a prefactor, which actually is not important, but let me write them down just to be precise. So t to the power n over 2 divided by square root of the determinant of the matrix J, okay? Then 1 divided by 2 pi to the n over 2, right? And then I have an integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, d phi 1 d phi n, right? So so n here is, of course, the size of my system, right? And then, so e to minus t over 2, sum over I and j, phi I, j I j inverse, phi j, right? And then plus sum over I, phi I, sigma I, okay? Again, this is just applying this transformation to this exponential here backwards, okay? Okay, let me just do one more thing. Let me change. So this integral here is just a multidimensional integral over real variables. I can change variables in this integral however I want, right? So let me change variables just to bring this whatever I have in the exponential here to a nicer form. So erase this. So let me change integration variables from phi I to phi I divided by t, right? So then I will get e to 1 over 2t sum over I and j, j, I, j, sigma I, sigma j is equal to, so 1 over square root of the determinant of j. So then this change of variables is going to give me a factor of 1 over t to the n, right, in the integration measure. So then I'm going to get 1 over square root of 2 pi t to the power n over 2, right? And then integral minus infinity to infinity d phi 1 d phi n e to minus 1 over 2 t sum over I and j phi I j I j inverse phi j, and then plus sum over I 1 over t in front phi I sigma I. So, you know, the only reason I did this this variable change is to have this 1 over t factor so that this looks like just an ordinary Boltzmann weight, right? Some energy divided by t. It's not really important. It's just for kind of cosmetic reasons, okay? Okay, and so now I can then write the partition function of the Ising model in this form, right? In the form of not just sum over spin configurations, but also this integral over this set of real variables phi, right? But of course, the nice thing here is that now the spins are not interacting between themselves. They are only interacting with this field phi I, okay? Okay, so I have the partition function equal to, so this is a sum over all spin configurations of e to 1 over 2t, sum over I and j, j, I, j, sigma I, sigma j. And on the other hand, this is equal to, so let me actually ignore this constant, okay? So this is something that the reason I want to ignore this because this is something that you know, does not involve any singularities. It just has a smooth dependence on t. So I can always absorb this, for example, into the definition of my integration measure here. Okay, so let me just ignore this constant. So I will say this is equal, but up to this constant. So I have sum over sigma, and then integral from minus infinity to infinity d phi 1 d phi n e to minus 1 over 2t sum over I and j phi I j I j inverse phi j plus 1 over t, sum over I, phi I, sigma I, okay? So this is called a functional integral. Representation of the partition function of the Ising model. And so, you know, this is basically a general method that's useful not only, you know, in the theory of phase transitions, but as I said, in general, of, you know, passing from kind of a microscopic theory that's defined in terms of its microscopic variables, like the Ising spins here, or electron, let's say, Grassmann fields, to a field theory, where we have real, real or complex fields, so real in this case. Okay, and as you will see, you know, this is a much more convenient representation for devising kind of analytical approximations to the problem. Okay, so we will not only be able to reproduce the mean field theory in this language, of course, but also go beyond it. Okay. Okay, so so what we can do now, of course, is sum. You know, since the spin variables have been decoupled by this transformation, right? And that's one of the points of it. We can now sum easily over all the spin configurations, right? Because this, just like in mean field theory, this looks like just a bunch of independent spins interacting with a field. The difference from mean field theory is that this field, phi I, is fluctuating, right? We are also integrating over, over all possible values of those fields on every side, okay? Okay, so let's sum over sigmas. And so the result is, of course, exactly the same as we got when we did the mean field theory. It's this log of twice the hyperbolic cosine function, right? So, well, let me just remind you how we got it. So, since, you know, this is just an exponential of a sum, I can just focus on one particular spin, sigma I. So sum over sigma I equals plus or minus one of E to 1 over 2t phi I sigma I for a particular site I, right? This is just equal to e to phi I over t plus e minus phi I over t, which is twice hyperbolic cosine of phi I divided by t. Right, and then I can write this as e to log of twice hyperbolic cosine of phi I divided by t, right? And so then what I get is that my partition function can be written in the following way. So let me introduce a shorthand notation for this multidimensional integral. So I'll simply write this product of differentials as capital D phi. Okay. So this is kind of the functional integral notation. So integral over, so this means integral over all the phis. And then E minus S of phi, where S of phi is equal to, so 1 over 2t sum over I and j phi I j I j inverse phi j. And so minus t times log, minus t sum over I log of, without t, just log, this is dimensionless, minus sum over I log of twice hyperbolic cosine of phi I divided by t, okay? So I will call this Landau functional or Landau-Ginzburg functional. The reason I called it S is because, you know, so in the context of relativistic quantum or in the context of quantum field theory, this would be action. Okay? And we will see later that there will be a lot of analogies between this and relativistic field theory. Okay? So basically, the continuum limit of this Ginzburg-Landau functional for the Ising model will look like the relativistic field theory for bosons in d minus 1 space dimension plus 1 time dimension. Okay? Okay, so you know, so far, everything that we have done is exact, right? Apart from neglecting this constant here, which is completely innocent, this is an exact transformation, okay? So evaluating this integral would be completely equivalent to evaluating the partition function of the Ising model, so it's impossible, okay? But the reason we want to do this, we like this transformation, is because it's much easier to make approximations in this language, right? In particular, because we've passed from discrete variables, the sigmas, right, which can take values plus or minus one, to real variables, okay? Okay, so first let's try to reproduce the results of the mean field theory, which we've derived before. So let's see what does mean field theory correspond to in this language. So it turns out that mean field theory corresponds to evaluating this integral in the saddle point, what's called the saddle point approximation, okay? So let me remind you what that is. Saddle point or stationary phase, it's also called. Approximation. Suppose I have just a one-dimensional integral of the following form. Suppose I want to calculate an integral from minus infinity to infinity dx of the following function, exponential of minus some function of x. Okay? And let me assume that this function f has a global minimum at x equals 0. Okay? So let f of x have a global minimum at x equals 0. So then, you know, because this the integrand here is a very strong function of x, it's an exponential, right? The integral, you can guess that the integral will be dominated by the interval of x near, very close to this global minimum of the function f, okay? So I will be dominated by the interval near the minimum of f . So then what I can do to evaluate this integral is just expand this function in Taylor series near the minimum, okay? So I'm gonna have f of x is approximately equal to f of zero, right? Then since it's a minimum, the first derivative vanishes. And so the next leading term is the second derivative plus 1/2 f double prime of zero times x squared, right? So I plug this in there. And so what I get for I is e to minus f of zero, right? And then integral from minus infinity to infinity dx e to minus 1/2 f double prime of zero times x squared, which is just a Gaussian integral that we have already seen when in this transformation, right? Which can be done again. So, which is equal to square root of 2 pi divided by this second derivative here times the exponential, okay? And so this is often a very good approximation to this type of integrals when you have an exponential of some function of f, as long as this function is well behaved, okay? So it has a well-defined minimum or several minima, in which case you will just sum over different minima, okay? Okay, so now let's apply this to this integral, okay? Let's apply this idea, let's estimate this functional integral, right? Using this method. Okay, so what I have to do is find the fields phi 1 to phi n, right, which minimize this functional S of phi, right? So let phi 1 bar, phi 2 bar, phi n bar be the configuration or the set of fields phi phi I which minimize S of phi, okay? So in this case, these fields have to satisfy the equation that ds d phi I is equal to zero for all I, right? Okay, so let's evaluate this derivative. Okay, so I'm gonna have 1 over t sum over j, jij inverse phi j, right? That's the derivative of the first term in S of phi. And the factor of 1/2 went away because I can have a particular I you know, both in front of Gij, inverse, and after it, right? Since it's a sum, it's an unrestricted sum over both over all the sides, right? And then so the derivative of this function log of twice hyperbolic cosine is the hyperbolic tangent, right? We have already done this when we did the mean field theory. So minus 1 over t, and this is phi j bar, minus 1 over t sum, without sum, hyperbolic tangent of phi I bar divided by t, okay? And this has to be equal to 0. So let me transform this to a different form. So this looks like I have a vector phi bar, right, multiplied on the left by a matrix J inverse. So let me multiply this equation on the right by matrix Jij. Okay? So multiply on the left, sorry, on the left by matrix Jij. So then what do I get? I get phi I bar, I can cancel 1 over t's in front, is equal to sum over j, Jij, hyperbolic tangent of phi j bar divided by t, right? And now, okay, so these phis, right, are supposed to be the fields that minimize S. But so due to translational symmetry of my problem, so due to the fact that this interaction strength Jij depend only on the distance between the sides I and j, actually all phi I bars have to be equal on all sides, right? Because all sides are equivalent. So by translational symmetry, I must have phi 1 equals phi bar 2, and so on, equals phi bar n equals phi bar, okay? So then this equation becomes phi bar is equal to capital J hyperbolic tangent of phi bar divided by t, where capital J is exactly the this parameter capital J from the mean field theory of the Ising model, right? So this is sum over J, Jij, okay? And now this looks exactly like mean field equation, but not for M, but for the molecular field, right? So you remember that we had the mean field equation for magnetization. So that was simply hyperbolic tangent of Jm divided by t, right? And you remember that I called this combination Jm the molecular field, right? Because it just for looking at the mean field Hamiltonian, it has a meaning of a field that acts on a given spin due to its interaction with the other spins in the lattice. So B sub m is just J times m. And so clearly then the equation for B sub m, B molecular, is equal to J hyperbolic tangent of B molecular divided by t, okay? Yeah. Right. Well, so that just follows, this is not even a physical statement. This is just a mathematical statement. This follows from the fact that this Jij here does not actually depend on I and J separately. It only depends on the distance. So for every I, when you sum over J, you're going to have the same result always. Okay. So you're right that it's in principle. I mean, so this is a formal mathematical transformation, right? But we see now that so basically the way you can see that those fields variables phi have the meaning of fluctuating molecular field is because they couple linearly to sigma i's, right? So this there was this intermediate step where we've just made this transformation, the Hubbard-Stefanovic transformation. And so the partition function was, sum over sigmas, some quadratic form of phi i's, and then there was a term 1 over t, phi I, sigma I. So something that couples linearly to the spins is a field, basically, by definition, right? So the point is that you can always transform a problem of interacting spins into a problem of independent spins, but which interact with this fluctuating field. Okay. Yeah. Right.
At this point, what do we know about S that we can apply that?
Well, I mean, all I'm doing is just so I'm assuming that S has a minimum, right? And finding the condition that the fields phi have to satisfy to give me the minimum. Yeah, no, so so the point here is that all I'm doing is, so, again, this is just a mathematical problem. You can look at this as just a mathematical problem. What I have to do is evaluate this integral, right? And I'm trying to evaluate this integral using the saddle point method. So the saddle point method tells me that if this function that in the exponential has a global minimum, then I can estimate the integral by expanding around the minimum. Okay, so that's what I'm doing. I'm just finding the minimum of S. Okay. Yeah. The last part. Oh, I just wanted to say that this has the same form, right? This equation has the same form as the equation that we've derived before by a different method for the molecular field, right? Yeah. So it's clear then that indeed this phi bar here has the meaning of the molecular field of the mean field theory. So mean field theory that we did before is equivalent in this language, in the language of the functional integral, in the language of the functional integral, to evaluating this integral by the saddle point method. Yeah. No, it's the same. We are starting from the same Ising model. It's all exactly the same. So far, all I'm doing is just reproducing what we did before, just in a different language.
What do I say when I introduce the
phi? Well, so, this is just a different representation for Okay, so my original problem is to, is I have the Ising model. I want to evaluate its partition function because that gives me information about all thermodynamics, right? So I can evaluate it equivalently, right, by doing this functional integral. Well, yeah, so it's effectively, you know, so, okay, so this is a mathematical transformation, but effectively what I want to do is improve on mean field theory by allowing the order parameter to fluctuate. And that's how we do it, right? Because here we have something that that turns into the just a uniform parameter in the saddle point method. But when we go beyond the saddle point, you know, these will be fluctuating fields, okay? So this is just a mathematical trick that allows me to go beyond mean field theory. Yeah.
If you're doing this with fermions, then do you have to have different phi-i's and phi-j's inside the
matrix? So, yeah, I mean, this can be done with fermions, right? So I can take a model of interacting fermions and decouple the, just like I decoupled the interactions between the spins here with this transformation. I can also decouple interactions between the fermions. Again, this is an exact transformation. So the problem with this is that, you know, it's also done. It's also useful. You know, this is how you can derive, for example, I don't know, Hartree-Fock theory or RPA and, you know, Ginzburg-Landau theory of superconductivity. The problem is that these fermions, you know, unlike here where I have just two spins interacting, sigma I and sigma j, so there is really, there are no two ways of decoupling them. It's just one. These fermions, I have four, you know, Grassmann fields. And there are many different ways in which you can decouple them. Well, because the interaction is a density, right? And density is a two. Is the, well, in the second quantized language is the psi dagger psi, right? So in that case, there are many different ways you can do that. And so there is no single way, and which means that you basically have to use different decouplings depending on the problem you're looking at. So it's not as straightforward. Yeah. No, you can, so you can decouple the, you know, so you have, okay, maybe we are getting too far into, away from the topic, but basically, you know, the, so the interaction between fermions looks like density interaction. And density is composed of two Grassmann fields, which is just a equivalent to a real, the pairs of Grassmann fields commute with other pairs. So you can still decouple them with a real or complex variable. So this again, so this shows that we recover mean field theory by approximating the this integral using the saddle point method. Okay. But of course, as we will see, the real value of this is not doing mean field theory. The real value is going beyond. And it's easy to do. Well, I mean, the first thing we will attempt, of course, is just expanding further away from this minimum. Yeah.
Sorry to get back to you. If you do this for Heisenberg, do you have the same problem with star four and having four fields?
Yeah. So for Heisenberg, you will get a similar thing, except this you know, this function log of twice the hyperbolic cosine, it will be some different function, some, I forget, some Bessel function or something like that. Because it's not just, it won't involve just summing over plus and minus one, but integrating over a unit vector.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still similar. Yeah, the structure is similar. Yeah. Well, I mean, you won't get the same partition function. You will get an approximation for the partition function, right?
Okay.
Right, but it's a good point. I mean, so far, all I have done is I've said that my partition function is equal to this, right? I've just evaluated. I just found the minimal. In principle, I also have to evaluate this part, which I have not done, and that's actually a good point because that creates problems.
Okay. So you just identified.
I've just found the minimum. Yeah. I've just found the minimum so far. Yeah. So I have not, we will do that, but I have not yet actually evaluated this part. Okay. So let's now, let's move ahead. Let me introduce another physical measurable quantity, which is going to play a very important role here, and we will then evaluate it using this method. So let me introduce what's called the correlation function. Let me just for a second go back again to the Ising model itself. So minus 1/2 sum over I and j, j I j sigma I sigma j, and let me add again purely for convenience, you will see why, a magnetic field, but which can depend on the site index. Okay, so minus sum over I bi sigma I. Okay, so you will see why I'm doing that in a second. Okay. Now let me define a correlation function. So spin-spin correlation function in the following way. So I will call this capital G IJ. And I will define this as a thermodynamic average of the product of fluctuations of the spins on the sides I and j, so which means sigma I minus the average of sigma I times sigma j minus the average of sigma j. So the reason I'm defining it in this way and not just, you know, sigma I times sigma j is because I want this correlation function to behave in the same way, independent of whether I am below the critical temperature, where there is a non-zero expectation value of sigma, or above the critical temperature, where I have zero expectation of sigma. So I'm always looking at fluctuations away from the expectation value. Okay. So then, if I define the correlation function in this way, it will behave in the same way both below the transition and above the transition. Okay, so if I open up these brackets, this is actually equal to, so this is going to be sigma I, sigma j average, right, minus sigma I average times sigma j average, okay? Okay, now let me show the following. Let me show that I can evaluate this this correlation function in the following way. So my claim, which I will prove, is going to be that I can calculate gij as minus t times the second derivative of the free energy with respect to these fields Bi and Bj, that's why I need them, taken at all the fields, at the point where all the fields are, all the external fields are set to zero, okay? So, and this will be, of course, the correlation function for the Ising model without the fields, right? So the fields that I've added here is just a mathematical device that allows me to calculate the correlation function as this second derivative. Okay, I add a bunch of fields, right? Calculate the derivative, but then set them to zero, and that gives me the correlation function for the Ising model. Okay, so let's just prove that. Okay, so what is f? F is minus t log z, right? Minus t log of the partition function. So then the second, let me write it here, the second derivative of f with respect to bi and bj. So this is going to be minus t, the second derivative of the log of the partition function. And this is equal to, so minus t d dbi. So let me do the first derivative. It's going to be 1 over z, right? And then dz db sub j, right? And then, okay, so let's now do the second derivative. So this is going to give me two terms, right? I will have, so t times 1 divided by z squared dz dbi dz dbj, and then minus t 1 over z. And then the second derivative of z with respect to bi and bj, right? Okay, so now let's see what these derivatives of the partition function are equal to. So let me. Okay, so z is equal to sum over all configurations of sigma e to 1 over 2t, sum over I and j, jij, sigma I, sigma j, minus, or no, sorry, plus. Yeah, plus 1 over t, sum over I, bi, sigma I. So when I differentiate this z with respect to bi, this just brings down in front of the exponential a factor of sigma I divided by t, right? So if I have dz dbi, this is equal to, so sum over all sigmas, sigma I divided by T, E to 1 over 2T, sum over I and J, J I J, sigma I, sigma J, plus 1 over T, sum over I, sigma I, B I, right? And so what is this? This looks almost like an average of sigma I, right? Thermodynamic average of sigma I, except so it misses a factor of 1 over Z, and there is an extra factor of 1 over T here, right? So this is simply equal to T, it's equal to Z divided by T times average of sigma I, okay? And so similarly, the second derivative, second cross derivative is gonna bring me two factors of sigma I times sigma J divided by T squared, right? So D2Z, dBi dBj is going to be equal to sum over all configurations sigma I times sigma J divided by T squared times the same thing, 1 over 2T, sum over I and J, Jij, sigma I, sigma J, plus 1 over T, sum on I, Bi, sigma I. And so this is equal to Z divided by T squared times the average of this product, right? So this is equal to Z divided by T squared times the average of sigma I and sigma J, okay? Okay, so then what do we get? We get that my correlation function, Jij, this second derivative, you want to prove that this is equal to the correlation function. So D2F, DBI, dBj with a minus sign and multiply it by T. So it's equal to T squared times 1 over Z, and I guess taking that B equals 0, 1 over Z D2Z dBi dBj taken at B equals 0, right? And then minus T squared minus T squared 1 over Z squared dZ dBi dZ dBj, again taken at B equals 0, right? And so this is equal to exactly what we want it to be equal to, right? So this part is equal to sigma I times sigma J, right? And this B equals 0 here just means that I'm evaluating the average here, taking b is to zero, so it's an average with respect to just the statistical weights, such as the statistical weights of the Ising model, and then minus sigma I average sigma j average. So indeed, this second derivative is equal to our correlation function. Okay. Now let's do the following. Let's calculate this correlation function, but using the functional integral representation for the partition function. Okay. Okay, so let's evaluate the correlation function using the functional integral representation. Okay, so we have, in this case, z equals integral over the real fields phi, e to minus s of phi, okay? And so I want to modify the s of phi just by adding, again, those site-dependent fields, bi, right? And this is easy to do, right, since my phi i's, as we have seen, have the meaning of fluctuating molecular fields. All I have to do is add bi in the argument of this hyperbolic cosine, right? So s of phi is going to be equal to 1 over 2t sum over I and j phi I j I j inverse phi j, and then minus sum over I log of twice hyperbolic cosine of phi I plus bi divided by t. Okay. And so I can calculate now the correlation function using exactly the same result, right, that we have just derived. So as we've just seen, jij may be calculated as minus t second derivative of the free energy with respect to the fields taken at b equals 0, which is the same as so t squared 1 over z d to z d bi d bj taken at b equals 0, and then minus t squared 1 over z squared dz dbi taken at b equals 0, and then dz dbj they cannot be equal 0, right? Okay, so to simplify this, let me use the following trick. So the fact that now I have my z as an integral from minus infinity to plus infinity over this set of real variables, right? This gives me the freedom to change the integration variables, right? And in particular, I can remove this bi from here, from the argument of this complicated function, and bring it in here into this quadratic form, right? So just to simplify the calculation of the derivative, so let me change integration variables from phi I to phi I minus bi, okay? So then my S of phi changes to 1 over 2t sum over I and j phi I minus bi j I j inverse phi j minus bj. And then this log does not depend on b anymore. So minus sum over I log of twice hyperbolic cosine of phi I divided by t. Okay? Okay, so now we can easily calculate these derivatives. So let me. Okay, so let's first calculate one of those first derivatives. I get dz dbi taken at b equals 0. Okay, so this will be integral over phi, right? And then, so the derivative over b, what's it going to do? It's going to bring down a factor of 1 over t phi I, 1 over t jij inverse phi j, right? So this will be 1 over t sum over j, jij inverse phi j e to minus s of phi, right? Right? Now let me change the variables again. Okay, sorry for these multiple mathematical transformations, but all of this has some meaning. Okay, so let me change variables from phi to what I will call m sub I, small m sub I, which is going to be precisely this sum. So jij inverse phi j, right? And the meaning, okay, so the meaning is should be clear, right? So phi I's have the meaning of fluctuating molecular fields, right? And you remember that the molecular field B sub m is equal to j times m. So this is just a transformation back from molecular fields to the fluctuating magnetizations, okay? So MI, as we will see in just a second, well, and it just should be clear from here, have the meaning of fluctuating magnetization. Okay. Okay, so then, so let me now write S of, rewrite the S in terms of variables M rather than phi, right? So S of M is going to be 1 over 2t sum over I and j mi jij mj, right? And then minus sum over I log of twice hyperbolic cosine of sum over j here, j I j m j divided by t, okay? This is without the fields, of course. But okay, so the point is that this thing now I can write as in the following way as so 1 over t, right, integral over m of mi, this is simply mi, e to minus s of m. Right, and therefore this is just equal to z divided by t times the expectation value of mi, right? So this is another way to see that mi is the fluctuating magnetization, right? So before we have derived the same result for in terms of the Ising variables, right? So we had dz dbi at b equals 0 equal z divided by t expectation value of sigma I, right? Now we have the same result, but in the language of these fluctuating magnetizations. So the expectation value of sigma I is the same thing as the expectation value of mi. And in fact, this continues. So this is true for all, not just for this expectation value, but for all higher correlation functions, in particular for j, I, j. Okay, so let me skip the algebra, but you can just in exactly the same way show that the second derivative, so d to z dbi dbj taken at b equals 0, right? So this is going to give me z divided by t squared expectation value of the product of mi and mj. Okay? Yeah. Sorry, say it again. B's, right? Yeah. So BI would enter in here, right?
Or could I not just write this entire thing plus 1 over T sum over I, B, I, and I?
No. So, okay. So BI enters originally into this log, right? I mean, I can of course later change. Right.
Still use,
Right. Sure, yeah, that's right. Because it just follows from, again, changing the variables here. Yeah. Okay, so what this means, again, is that Gij is also equal to Mi Mj expectation value minus average of Mi times average of Mj, okay? And this will be true for all possible correlation functions you can imagine. Okay, so again, this is just shows that that this Mi, again, has the meaning of fluctuating magnetization. Okay? Okay, so now let's actually calculate this correlation function explicitly, assuming that we can use the saddle point approximation for the partition function. Okay, so let's evaluate the correlation function in the mean field approximation. Okay, so let's evaluate the correlation function Gij explicitly in the mean field or the saddle point approximation. Okay. Okay, first of all, let me note the following thing that I can evaluate Mi as we have just seen, right? So Mi is equal to wrong notation in my notes here. So let me again assume that Mi bar, so I will call these the configurations of the fields Mi that minimize S of M, right? So this is the set of Mi that minimize S of M. Okay, so then Mi bar, right, I can evaluate as minus df dbi, right, taken at B equals zero. Oh, let me actually keep B finite for now. Okay. And so this is equal to minus dBi of T log Z which is t divided by z dz dbi, right? And so this is going to be equal to, on the other hand, just from this expression for s, right, the hyperbolic tangent of sum over j, j I j m j plus b I, everything divided by t, right? So if I want to add bi's, again, they will enter as an argument of this hyperbolic cosine, right? So on the other hand, and so this should be again mj bar. On the other hand, jij, which is minus t d2f dbi dbj, okay, now taken at b equals 0, right? You can see from here that I can also evaluate it as just the derivative of mi with respect to bj, right? Taken at b equals 0. So this is equal to t dmi bar dbj taken at b equals 0, right? Okay, so I have to differentiate this expression, the hyperbolic tangent of this thing with respect to bj, right? Sorry, this is, no, that's right. Plus bi. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. So I have to evaluate this differentiate this hyperbolic tangent with respect to bj, right? And then take bj equals 0. So the dependence on bj is going to have two sources here. There is an explicit dependence on b, right? But there is also an implicit dependence on b because mi bars are the solutions of this equation, right? Mi bar equals hyperbolic tangent, this thing plus bi. So it's just a mean field equation, but in the presence of those fields bi. Right? So in the presence of those fields bi, right, the mean field equation changes. Right? That's why I have not just m bar, but mi bar, because the site dependence fields explicitly break this translational symmetry now. Okay? Okay, so let's now evaluate this this derivative. So I'll have, okay, so this is equal to t d dbj, okay, of the hyperbolic tangent of sum over j, j I j m j bar plus bi divided by t, and then so this derivative is taken at b equals 0, okay. Okay, so I'll have the following terms. So first of all, if I is equal to j, then this is going to give me a contribution to the derivative, right? So this is equal to, let me write it like this, delta ij, right, plus these m bars, as I said, depend implicitly on b. So I have plus sum. So let me write it as sum over some other index L, not to confuse, you know, this summation variable J with this fixed J. Okay. So sum over L, J I L, right? And then I have D M bar L D B J, right? Taken at B equals 0 times the derivative of the tangent itself with respect to the argument, okay? And the derivative of the tangent of x is, just believe me, is equal to 1 minus tangent hyperbolic of x squared, okay? So times 1 minus tangent hyperbolic squared of the same argument, but taken already at B equals 0. So sum over L, J I L, M L bar divided by T, okay? Okay, so now we are almost done. This is actually much simpler than it looks. No, there is a J. So there is I, J here, right? So that's fine. Okay, so what do we have here? So this dm bar l dbj is nothing but the correlation function itself, right? This is just capital G Lj, right? Just from here, divided by T. So we have Gij is equal to delta ij plus 1 over t sum over l j I l g l j, right? And then this hyperbolic tangent squared is nothing but m I bar squared, right? Because m I bar satisfies the mean field equation, mi bar equals hyperbolic tangent of this sum. Okay? Times 1 minus mi bar squared. Okay? And then at this point, we can actually remove this this index I, right? Because we are calculating this correlation function at B equals 0. And at B equals 0, we have the full translational invariance. So this actually does not depend on I. Okay, so M bar simply satisfies the mean field equation, hyperbolic tangent of J M bar divided by T, where J is sum over small j, j I j. Okay? Okay, so this is an equation. It's a matrix equation for this correlation function. that we have to solve. Okay. Okay, so let's solve this first in the case when t is greater than tc, so that the only solution of this equation is m bar is equal to zero, right? So then m bar is just equal to zero. And so what we have is just jij is equal to so delta ij plus 1 over t sum over l j I l g l j, right? Which I can rewrite in the following way as sum over L delta IL minus 1 over T J IL G L J, right, is equal to delta IJ. So I've just moved, you know, this to the left and left delta IJ on the right hand side. So then it's clear that you know JLJ is just equal to inverse of this matrix, right? This is simply an equation G inverse times G equals 1, right? So all we have to do now is evaluate the inverse of this matrix. Of course, the problem is that you know it's a large matrix, which we actually don't know the explicit form of. That depends on the explicit form of these interactions between the spins. But what we can do here is exploit this translational invariance. Okay. So whenever we have translational invariance, this kind of problem can always be solved by Fourier transform. Because the Fourier transform in the situation when we have translational invariance always diagonalizes this kind of matrices, okay? So basically, whenever my matrices IJ depend only on the distance between the sides and not on the sides themselves, I can diagonalize these matrices by Fourier transform, okay? Well, another way you can think of this is that, you know, it's connected with the fact that a momentum, you know, if you think quantum mechanically, momentum is conserved. Momentum is a good quantum number whenever you have translational invariance, right? And Fourier transform is just passing from kind of real space to momentum space, okay? Okay, so we'll do this tomorrow.